The World Tourism Association names this as the fastest growing sector within the tourist market globally. I suppose if we take an example that's nearer home, it might show us the kind of growth that's happening in this area. If you look at the number of people who collected their passport, their Compostela, for completing the Camino in 1987, approximately 3,000 registered in Santiago with the Compostela office to collect their document. If you were to go back to that same office this year, 2017, and ask how many collected the Compostela there, it was 300,000. So that would show you the kind of expansion that's happening in this area. And that's only one example, the Camino. I mean, walking is a spiritual practice that goes across different religious traditions. So there are other sites like the Hajj, if you're to look at Islam, that equally are experiencing this kind of expansion at this time. So spiritual tourism is definitely a growth area in the tourism sector this time.
Would you call those pilgrims and just say pilgrimages are up, or is there something different about spiritual tourism, or is spiritual tourism a way of marketing or making it appealing maybe to other people?
I suppose there are many dimensions to the use of the term of spiritual tourist. It's probably trying to take on board the fact that we live in a time where certainties are breaking down, and the kind of way that people name what they're attached to is changing. So there's more uncertainty. There's kind of leaving one way of naming our identity behind, and we haven't quite found what it is that we're moving towards. So I think pilgrimage may be associated with specific sites and specific practices on those sites. I think switching to this term of spiritual tourism may indicate more the seeking that's happening, the inner seeking that's happening, and that everybody may not do the practice or the walk in exactly the same kind of way. The inner disposition may be quite similar, but the outer practice can vary, or the language that people use for doing these ancient practices vary from place to place. So I think spiritual tourism is trying to kind of blend together two things. The fact that this, the essential core of a seeker is still there, but by adding the tourism dimension, I suppose people are looking at the fact that you can, if you go on these kind of trips today, you inevitably bump into things like air travel and what shoes are you going to wear, what rain gear are you going to use, and that's all part of the marketing world that we live in. So it's trying to acknowledge, you know, it's a mixed reality. You have two dimensions that you have to handle, and probably the tourism indicates some of that cultural material context that's a necessary part of undertaking this kind of practice today.
And I mean, why do you think there's such a growth in it? Because, I mean, we're always hearing about how in Europe attendances at mass are down, and even in Ireland and so on, you know. So, like, what is it about spiritual tourism and these walks and these sites and these holy sites that are attracting people?
So there are a lot of dimensions to that question. One dimension to it is that what's, you know, if you think of a practice like Mass, it's an indoor practice. But I mean, there's a very ancient tradition in Ireland of Mass rocks, and the whole tradition of the Mass rocks being revived and becoming centres of pilgrimage is happening. Nobody's organising it, but it's just beginning to manifest itself again. So I suppose what we see is kind of an anthropological feature, that people are beginning to move out of maybe very structured institutions, which the buildings represent, but they're still seeking that inner core of authenticity, that inner core of being good people who act justly and love warmly and carry those kind of basic gospel values. Jesus didn't have a cathedral to live in. He had no cathedral to gather his disciples in. He was a pilgrim preacher. So I suppose maybe even it's going back to the basics of even Christian practice. And of course, it's very much part of the ancient Celtic tradition as well. So I suppose when you see the rise of interest in Irish language, Irish music, indigenous Irish spiritual tradition, of course, is going to rise again, which had these pilgrim roots at its heart. And, you know, it's only a couple of years since we had the official launch of the Pilgrim Paths website, the launch of a Pilgrim Paths day, week, walking options. So all of this is happening intuitively from the ground up, that there's kind of a retrieval movement. There's a movement of, you know, leaving one practice but searching. Like, you know, there's a famous parable by the short story writer Kafka, and a person is walking, going out of the city on a horse, and he meets one of his friends walking towards the city, and the friend says to him, "Where are you going? Like, it's evening time. Where are you going now?" And the man on the horse replies back, "Away from here, away from here, away from here." So it's not clear what the movement is heading towards, but it's clear what it's leaving behind.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, that certainly the structures, as you say, those cathedrals, and, you know, they all really came in. As you mentioned, they weren't really a part of the original Christianity. They all really came in with Emperor Constantine, and then they hit their peak around the time of the Renaissance, where, like, there was this real glorification of cathedrals and art and everything magnificent like that inside these stone walls. So it's a turning away from that.
Yes, that I suppose the spiritual quest manifests its form under the influence of what's happening in the culture. So if you have an imperial empire culture, some of the symbols that are part of that culture, like castles and great halls and great walls, naturally influence the shape and form which the spiritual quest takes in that culture. Now we're leaving behind some of those great institutions, and the spiritual quest is much more turning into the heart of people. And so we find this more personal way of expressing that quest beginning to emerge, which the walking enterprise creates. And I suppose globally it's a form of solidarity as well, because so many people are migrants today and are compelled by various forms of injustice to move. So there's an identification and solidarity that happens in these pilgrim walks as well. So globally, it's almost a kind of a way of reaching out to each other and coming to a deeper understanding of what is it to just have what's on my back? What is it to live like that? It's part of, I suppose, the rebellion against consumerism and materialism that's there, the slow movements, the sustainability movements, the eco-villages. All of these, I suppose, are part of the same kind of reality of seeking another way to live that's more sustainable in the world that we're in today.
Yeah, it's a total paring back, and that's a very good example you give of, well, what is it like to live with just me and my rucksack and the pair of shoes I have on my feet?
So I think it's a very embodied experience of the spiritual quest. So it's not possible just to have notions and ideas and doctrines in one's head. One actually feels what it's like to live in this way in one's body. You feel tiredness, you feel hunger, you feel the weakness of the body in blisters or whatever. So all of these realities create a different kind of connection. And also you become aware of the kindness of strangers when you do that kind of journey as well. You meet the chemist who will help you with your blisters, or the person who will offer hospitality just to pilgrims. It's not a tour, even though it's called spiritual tourism, many of the people who offer hospitality along these traditional routes have a very open door, non-commercial approach. So you experience a whole different way of being in the world in these kind of experiences.
Yeah, so you really get to walk the walk. I mean, I was going to just ask that you mentioned that a lot of people who are helping out in a non-commercial way. But, you know, are there people who are maybe jumping on the bandwagon as well and saying, oh, you know, this is great, I've got a holy well near me or a walk near me, maybe I'll set up a B&B here or something?
I suppose in every development, there's always the shadow and light. You know, you think of cyberspace, you know, there are the great opportunities that it creates for people to have information that they wouldn't otherwise have, to find support groups if they have a health or illness or whatever it may be. But then you have the people who exploit that and sell pills that you don't need, or, you know, cultivate these images, you need to look like this if you're going to look well. So you get both sides with any development that happens. So it's going to be expected that as spiritual tourism rises, that you're going to have people who will exploit it, as well as people who want to live it with authenticity. So it's the inevitable reality of these times, I suppose.
And if people want to get involved, or if this is resonating with someone and they're thinking, I want to know more about this and I want to know how I can get involved with walks in Ireland or spiritual tourism here in Ireland or even abroad, how could they do that?
So on Friday the 9th of March in Waterford Institute of Technology, the tourism building, for the first time we're going to gather as many people who are involved in this sector. Many of people who operate, you know, are solo operators. They have their tour that they offer to Glendalough or Ballintubber or Scattery Island or whatever it might be. And there's so much we can learn from each other if we support each other. And also there's, if we want to preserve the authenticity of the experience as well, if we want to care for the sites, if we want the sites to be approached in a sustainable way, which will allow them to be there into the future as well, the more we can do this together, the more fruitful it will be. So many of the people who are operating now as ones and twos on various sites are going to have the opportunity to come together and to look at the sustainability elements, the business elements, the spiritual practice elements, because that's one of the findings in research in this area is if the product, if we use that commercial language, is not authentic, you're not going to retain your business in that kind of area. So how do you ensure that you're actually true to what the well or the monastery or the path points to? How can you honour what its true history is and the history of people who have walked it or visited it through the years so that it doesn't just become a historical artifact and there's no contemporary experience of the spiritual offered to people who are actually engaging with these practices today.